Well, let me start off by saying I am not Pastor Mark. So if that is greatly disappointing to any of you, please take this moment to rise and exit through the back doors, and you can be first in line at Golden Corral. However, that does not apply to my family, and Shane, especially not to you, because when you signed on, it was for better or for worse. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Andrea Kirkpatrick. My husband Shane here in the front row. We have three kids, Ellie and Joe and Megan. Ellie plays piano, Joe plays bass. Megan sings up here occasionally. The next information you're probably expecting from me, you're expecting me to provide my credentials. Well, let's address that. I'm not a Bible scholar. I'm certainly not a preacher. I have never claimed to be either one of those things, and I've never had aspirations to be either one of those things. But I have lived with one for almost 25 years, and so maybe a little of that has rubbed off, and that's why I'm up here today. Who I am. I am a wife, a mom. I'm a preschool director. I'm a teacher. I'm a rather overcommitted volunteer. I'm a baker. And of recent years, I'm a biker. So not like Harleys, but just, you know, bikes. It wasn't until this most recent phase of my life that I ever thought that maybe God might have give somebody like me something to say and something that might truly contribute and make a difference to somebody else. The other thing you should know about me is that I sing. I sing all the time. I sing everywhere. In the car, I sing at work. I hear the children asking the teacher periodically, who's singing? Where's that music? Oh, that's just Mrs. Kirkpatrick again. She just sings all the time. I sing at the grocery store, and strangers will say, oh, I just heard that song on Caleb. I sing on my bike rides. And while I enjoy that very much, it's not necessarily something I recommend because you end up with bugs in your mouth. But I tell my husband and my family and those who are getting to know me a lot that my brain is 80% song lyrics. Just is. During Pastor Mark's sermons on Sunday mornings, I do pay attention. I do. And until I hear a word or a phrase that takes me directly to a song, and then I come to a minute or so later and realize he's moved on and I missed what went in that blank. So I have to look at Megan's paper. That happens to me a lot. Or I'll be sitting by Ellie and Pastor Mark will say something and I'll start whispering in her ear the lyrics to a song and she slaps me on the leg and tells me to pay attention. While I have never claimed to have an amazing voice or vocal talent at all, I have always had a strong connection to singing and to songs. I think even as a child, and my parents are here today, I give them some credit for that. I have very vivid memories every Saturday morning of the Statler brothers being blared through our three-level house. That was cleaning time, and when the Statlers were on, you were cleaning. And you were singing, but you were also cleaning. My dad was an industrial arts teacher at the middle school level for many, many years. And he also worked the farm and built houses in the summer. And I have lots of memories of him coming home very tired after one of those jobs and needing to take a break. And so you would find him laying on the floor, not on the couch, but on the floor in the front room where our record player was. And there would be a stack of gospel records. And he would just be playing them over and over again. I have a very specific memory. I was probably around 7, I'm guessing. Oddly enough, I was in the bathtub. But I remember contemplating the verse from Luke 19. It's Luke 19:40. It is where Jesus is entering Jerusalem on Palm Sunday. And verse 40 says, if they keep quiet, the stones would do the shouting for them. Another version says, if they keep quiet, the stones along the road will burst into cheers. And that has always stuck with me. even as a kid, I remember thinking about that verse a lot and thinking, well, not on my watch. They're not going to be crying out if I have breath in my lungs. And then one of the songs Dad used to play from 1975, the song was called "This Is the Time I Must Sing." And part of the lyrics to that song are, "If the rocks would cry out, should his praises die out, then the stones must keep silent. As long as I've breath for the singing, his praise will keep ringing, and I will keep singing my song." Many months ago, I shared with some of you on a Wednesday evening how much the song 10,000 Reasons means to me. And one of the reasons why are these particular lyrics. It says, "The sun comes up, it's a new day dawning. It's time to sing your song again. Whatever may pass and whatever lies before me, let me be singing when the evening comes." No matter what I'm facing, I almost always have a song playing in my head. And even on those extremely hard days when I feel like I've lost my song, it is very rare that God does not give me one back before the end of the day. So it should come as no surprise to you, after hearing all that, that my message comes from a song today. The song you heard during offertory was "Oh My Soul" by Casting Crowns. And the line that I'm working with today is, "There's a place where fear has to face the God you know." I first heard that song a few months ago, after I had just been hit with a blow that I didn't see coming, and literally shook me to my core, questioned pretty much everything about who I was and the things I did and why I did them. I spent a lot of time in prayer and a lot of time with songs. And this particular one stood out for me, and this line from this song really, really spoke to me. And I had two initial thoughts. The first was it was a statement. It was a concrete, firm rock that a Christian could stand on confidently, and it gave me strength. It gave me comfort. And then almost immediately it occurred to me that this line likely has no meaning for those who don't know God. It just doesn't. And so it stayed with me. I returned to this song. I returned to this line over and over again until one day, like a light bulb went off, and I understood that it wasn't so much a statement of comfort. It was actually a command. And that's the way I began to look at it. As Christians, there has to be a place where fear meets the God we know. If we profess faith in Christ, we ultimately have no other option. I shared some of these thoughts with my coworker at preschool, and at the time I told her, "There's a sermon in there." And sure enough, that's why I'm up here with this mic in my hands this morning. Over the past many weeks, I kept messing with this idea. It kept messing with me. I began to write things down, and that gets us to where we are. So I want to see if I can communicate clearly to you the message I received from this lyric. There is a place where fear has to face the God you know. So we're going to focus first on the word place. God is everywhere. At all times, wherever we are, wherever we were, wherever we will be. And that understanding is very important to our faith. Psalm 139 says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there, your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast." So God is everywhere. But I believe that as we regularly seek God, and we purposefully strive to connect with him, that we'll discover our own special place to meet him. A meeting place of safety, of comfort, of peace, of solace, a place of communion with God. That's a nod to my Quaker heritage there. Where we meet with him and we talk with God, we hear from him, and we simply sit in his presence. Jesus did that while he was on earth. We're told in Luke that Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. And in Mark, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Jesus had a routine. It's clear from these scriptures that this was something he did all the time. We aren't always told exactly where he went, but he went. And we know that he went to seek time with God and to have a place where he could be alone with his Father and talk to him. So that got me thinking about my own places. What places have I had? God is everywhere, but generally so is my brain. I regularly update Shane. He'll know how my day is going because I'll let him know how many tabs I have open in my brain. And it usually corresponds to the number of tabs that are open on my computer, and it's usually a double-digit number. So I have to get away. I have to remove myself from the everyday settings where I find myself. I have to avoid distractions. I need to get away from the phone, away from email. I need to get away from dishes. I need to get away from meals to be cooked and laundry to be washed. I need to go to a place where nothing needs to be done. I need to go to a place that just needs to be enjoyed, experienced, or appreciated, where I can just sit and just be. And so for me, those places often involve outdoors, the nature. I grew up on a farm. A lot of that was wooded. We had a creek running through it. And so as a kid, I remember just going off in the woods, finding a quiet place where I could listen to the creek. And that was a place for me. Most of my adult life, I've been a very early morning person. So early mornings, I know that's more of a time than a place, but still, that's the time, that's the place for me to meet with God. One of my favorite times is in the winter when I get up really early and you look outside. And I am a country girl, but I've been in the city for a long time now. But to see a streetlight and to see gigantic snowflakes falling down that streetlight melts me. And it's God saying to me, shh, just stop. Just stop. Just breathe. Just be with me. It's one of my favorites. And then bike rides, of course. Do a lot of praying and a lot of thinking on bike rides. And occasionally, when I can't get to one of these other places, in the recliner in my living room, that works. The places that I've had have changed during my life, but there's almost always been a place. Currently, for me, the dark and quiet, and sometimes the cold or very hot, the very heat of this very sanctuary early on Sunday mornings has been my place. And I challenge you, if you don't have a place, seek God often enough that you find your place. So if we go on, there's a place where fear has to face the God you know. This song, Oh My Soul, was written by Mark Hall of Casting Crowns, and he wrote it after he was diagnosed with cancer. So for him, the fear that sparked this song was cancer. But maybe fear isn't your challenge today. Maybe you're experiencing anxiety or stress, regret, guilt, worry. Or maybe you struggle with hate or anger, jealousy, sadness. Or maybe your battle is with perfectionism or insecurity. We're told to bring those things to God. 1 Peter 5:7 says, cast your cares upon him, for he cares for you. And in Psalm 34:4, I sought the Lord, and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. So if there's a place where fear has to face the God you know, face, it's just a four-letter word. It's a pretty common word. We use it a lot, but I think we underestimate its meaning, and so I looked it up. Face, to give way, to bow to encounter, to come to terms with, or to be conquered by. My personal favorite, to confront and deal with. I love that. I find it very comforting that the fear and the worry and the insecurity that to me are so big and so scary and intimidating have to encounter and deal with my God when I lay them at his feet. So picture for a minute, picture your sadness or whatever it is, whatever baggage that you're carrying, and picture yourself placing it at the feet of God and watching what happens to it when it has to come to terms with God. Take the perfectionism that haunts you, the fears that keep you paralyzed, the worry that keeps you up at night, the unforgiveness that squeezes your heart. Place it at God's feet and see what happens. What a privilege. I'm going to go back into a song lyric here. You know where I'm going? What a privilege to take it to the Lord in prayer. Go to that place where you meet with God, with whatever is weighing heavily on your heart and your mind, and leave it there to confront and deal with the God you know. If you have kids, particularly more than one kid, you know that all kids are different. Being blessed with twins, we got lots of questions from the very beginning about their similarities and their differences. One thing we learned very quickly was, this should be of no surprise to any of you, that Ellie actually thrived on interaction as an infant. I know. Joe, on the other hand, had a definite threshold. And if you crossed that threshold, he couldn't take it anymore. He would just cry. And it took a lot of convincing, once Shane and I figured this out, to convince the grandparents when he got to that state, you just need to put him down because you are not going to make him happy by giving him more and more attention. So finally did convince them, and it did work for him, and he sort of grew out of it. But anyway, when Megan was born, it did not take long to figure out that more so than the other two, she was one who craved physical touch. Hugs were her thing. We used to get what we called Maggie hugs from her, where she would wrap her arms and her legs around you and hang on like a koala bear, and you could carry her all over the house and you could do other things while she held on to you. So if you ever need to make Megan's day, just give her a big hug. As Ellie and Joe grew up, we learned more and more differences. One of those has come in recent years when they began driving. It became clear very early on that Joe was the type of person you could give north, south, east, and west directions to. Not a problem. He knew what you were talking about. Ellie, on the other hand, it meant nothing to her. Meant nothing. Unless you had the whole conversation of, you know, sun rises in the east, sets in the west, you know, then she could get, but just general, no. Ellie needed landmarks. You tell her landmarks, she can get to where she's going. It's not a problem. Of course, now they both use their phones, so neither one of them have any issues, but these were differences. So what does it mean to know someone? Dictionary definitions, again, a little four-letter word we use all the time. What does it really mean? Well, it means to be acquainted with, to have experience with, and to recognize the nature of. Okay. After almost 25 years of being married to Shane, I am acquainted with Shane. I know he doesn't like celery. I know he could live on ice cream. He has to run to stay sane. He doesn't have a middle name. And he doesn't like loud noises in the car. Right, kids? Mm-hmm. I have experience with Shane. I know he is a man of routines. And I know that it can take him quite some time to work through a decision. I also recognize his nature. He's faithful. He's constant. He's patient. And he loves unconditionally. So when it comes to my family, I know these people. I have come to know them through countless interactions, countless tests and trials, and countless joys and celebrations. there are still some surprises, still some things to discover, particularly about the kids as they continue to grow. But in the same way that I've gotten to know them, we have to seek to know our God. And in the process of seeking to know, we will find that our understanding of God is ever changing and growing. God tells us who he is throughout the Bible. 1 John 4 says that God is love. Deuteronomy 7:9 tells us that God is faithful. Isaiah 48:17 says, I am the Lord your God who teaches you. Deuteronomy 4:31 says, the Lord your God is a merciful God. In other places in the Bible, we learn that he's the one who heals us. He's faithful. He's the rock. He's the God who avenges me. He saves. He justifies. In much the same way I got to know Shane and my kids, I've gotten to know God over the years. Our understanding expands based on encounters with God. I know occasionally Pastor Mark will tell us when he's starting a sermon, he'll say, well, I was going to call this sermon such and such, but then I changed my mind and gave it another name. Well, this one had a different title. My sermon had a different title for a while, too. It was almost, instead of being called Knowing God, it was called Knowing My God. But I changed it because I didn't want to imply that the God I serve is a different God than the one you serve, or that the God of the Bible is different from the one I serve. But I will tell you this, I know him in ways that you may not. And you know him in ways that I may not. Why? Because our experiences with him are different. Our individual experiences shape how we see God, and they define God for us. As a child, I think I knew God probably as the one who loves and the one who gives rules. Teenage years that I particularly didn't enjoy very much, filled with decisions to be made and peer issues and general teenage yuck, I came to know God as one who guides, one who understands, one who cares, one who's constant and ever-present. As a young adult, one newly married, entering the real world, wanting desperately to have children and struggling for years before we saw that dream come true. I came to know my God as one who has compassion, one who comforts, one who provides, one who gives strength, and one who answers prayer and adds beyond what we can ever hope. As the kids were growing up, I came to know God as one who gives abundantly, one who is worthy. Came to know him as the God of joy and the God of grace. Which leads me to another story. When I was talking about getting, I got clearance from Ellie, because she was old enough that I needed to get clearance from her. But when this story happened, Megan was young enough that I didn't need her, okay. But Joe was quick to point out, Mom, remember, I had no part of that. So, Joe, you're in the clear. Ellie and Joe were probably six, and we had a van that we had saved for and needed, because we had three kids now, and they would not fit in the back of the station wagon we had. You couldn't shut the doors with all three of the car seats. So we got a van. We knew we were going to have it a long time. We knew that we needed to take good care of this van. Megan, if Ellie and Joe were six, Megan was two or three. Not really old enough to know better, but Ellie was. Two of the car seats were in the back seat of the van. One of them stayed in the middle section of the van. Got the kids out one day, and two someones, had taken an ink pen, and written on the light-colored tan upholstery, by the armrest on each side, there was a lot of writing on there. It wasn't writing, it was scribbles. There was a lot of ink on there, let's just put it that way. I was furious. I knew I couldn't really hold it against Megan. She wasn't quite old enough to know better, but I will say that Ellie and Joe, just because he was, around, they got an earful. We got online, I got online. I looked up all kinds of ways to get this ink out off my van. I tried, I don't know, 6 or 8 at least different remedies. It didn't do any good. It faded it maybe slightly, but you wouldn't have known if you hadn't seen it before. So I thought, oh my word, what are we gonna do? This is not good. Again, they got another earful. The next morning, I was getting ready to take them somewhere to run an errand. I was putting things in the van, and all that ink was gone. And I said to Shane, what did you do overnight? How did you fix that? He said, Andrea, I didn't touch it. He said, I thought you did. He said, I didn't touch it. That was grace. And it was a beautiful, beautiful object lesson for the kids about how we can't erase sin on our own. It takes an act of God. It takes grace. That, of course, was a powerful lesson for the kids, but perhaps even more powerful for me and for Shane. So lately, I have become more and more acquainted with God as one who orchestrates, one who teaches and challenges, one who equips and empowers, who defends and delivers, and one who restores. And here's the heart of my message. And I'll get bonus points from my husband because this comes from the Old Testament and that's his area. In Joshua 1, Moses has died and God is giving Joshua instructions on how to lead the Israelites into the promised land. Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people, get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I am about to give them. I will give you every place where you set your foot. This next part is taken from an entry in a book of daily devotions called Streams in the Desert. Arthur Tappan Pearson says, besides the literal ground unoccupied for Christ, there is the unclaimed, untrodden territory of divine promises. What does God say to Joshua? Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you. And then he draws the outlines for the land of promise, all theirs, on one condition, that they shall march through the length and the breadth of it and measure it off with their own feet. So what does that mean for us? It means that we need to actively seek to know our God. He's given us a vast land of promises, but we need to step into that land. We need to walk through it, experience it, and live these promises as our own. What good does it do us to hear that God promises restoration if we never take anything to him that needs restored? And what good does it do for us to be told that God will guide us if we never seek direction from him? What good does it do to read that God fights for us if we never ask him to help in our daily battles? Or to hear that God will mend what is broken if we don't hand him the broken pieces that we clutch so tightly? If we don't purposefully and continually seek to know our God better, to know him more and more, then we will lack a complete understanding of who he is, of his love and his power. So let's use a current analogy. And this will amuse my children. It's like having a smartphone, the latest and greatest smartphone, and only using it to make phone calls, which I did for a while. Well, how do we learn to use a smartphone? Well, I came up with 4 ways. 1, we get instructions from the professionals at the store when you go and purchase your smartphone. 2, we can read the instructions that come with the phone or watch videos on YouTube to figure some things out. 3, we can talk to our friends and family and find out what they've discovered about their new smartphone. And 4, we just learn through trial and error. So how do we learn about the God we serve? Well, we get instruction. We come to church, we hear from the pastor, we participate in Sunday school, we participate in Bible studies. 2, we read God's word, his instruction manual. We study it, we refer to it regularly. 3, we learn from others. We share our stories. And if I may, as Pastor John Lane used to say, camp out on this point for just a second. Yeah, I think we underestimate. We fail to appreciate how infinitely valuable our personal stories are. We can learn so much about who God is by hearing who he's proven himself to be in other people's lives. I can learn about the God you've experienced, the God you've come to know, and you can learn from me. And finally, 4, we learn more about who God is through trials and errors, joys and triumphs. Every time we rely on him, he demonstrates more of his power, we discover more of his nature, and we see the fulfillment of more of his promises. We can say, I know because he walked me through this, or I know because I turned to him when this happened. And as our knowing of God expands, we find more and more that we can bring all of our struggles to God. We can become increasingly confident that the God we serve, the God we love, and the God who saved us can handle and deal with and can conquer anything we bring to him. How absolutely amazing, comforting, and reassuring to know there's a place where we can lay down whatever it is that's worrying us or scaring us or hurting us or troubling us at the feet of God. And those worries and fears and hurts and troubles are going to have to encounter and deal with our God, the God we've come to know, who's completely powerful, completely competent, completely faithful, and completely love. Imagine if we could all live every day like we know this to be true, that there is a place where fear has to face the God we know. Have the worship team come up. We're going to sing a song called Knowing You, Jesus.